Whammy Radio continues.
I'm joined now by Fred Katz, a man who looks ravishing and clean-shaven like David Boreanaz from Bones, but is lacking the gun and badge necessary to keep Lawler's law. But who cares? He's a senior contributor to Clipper Blog, writer for Bleacher Report, RotoWire, and the Cover 32 Jets, and he takes my questions every now and then on Clipper Blog Live with Andrew Hahn. Fred Katz!
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing, man?
These Clippers, Cats, they're about to have another great regular season. 50-plus wins, their second Pacific Division, their third consecutive playoff appearance in their entire franchise history, going back to the days of the good old Buffalo Braves. They aren't your granddads, they aren't your daddies, they're your sons, Clippers. Tell me about their regular season. What has it been like for Blank City, formerly known as Lob City?
It's been so interesting to follow because there's been such a progression from the past few years. We've kind of seen this team grow the last few years, right? You know, we saw them the first year of the Chris Paul experiment. It was kind of just them getting to know each other, them feeling each other out. Last year, you know, we saw them hit a little bit more of a groove. There was a 17-game winning streak, and, you know, there was regression, but with some guys, you know, Blake had a little bit worse of a year, but we saw the team kind of come together a little bit more, and now, you know, it's kind of starting to come to some sort of culmination with under Doc Rivers, and there's more discipline and they're playing better defense, and DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin have just improved unbelievable amounts, and Chris Paul is having his best year in a couple of seasons, and Jamal Crawford might be sixth man of the year, and the additions of, you know, guys like Redick and Big Baby Davis and Danny Granger for a little bit. You know, I think we're seeing the best of the Clippers right now, and it's a good time for them to be playing their best basketball.
Blake Griffin has been doing great things for the Clippers. But there are all these critics out there who want to turn him into something he's not, tarnish his nice guy persona, bait him into traps, anything to get him kicked out of the league. But he's responded to these critics, the naysayers, and to his own franchise who even considered trading him before the deadline. From dunking machine to an all-around scorer, from a frustrated player to a disciplined player, read Tim Duncan, from Chris Paul's sidekick to the leader of the Griffin Force. Tell me about the growth, improvement, and maturation of Blake Griffin.
Yeah, you know, I think it all starts with the free throw shooting, honestly. Now that he's up to a 71% free throw shooter, it's just kind of all changed. He's, you know, there was a point last year and even 2 years ago when he shot 52% from the line in the lockout season where you could tell he was a little bit afraid of going to the line. He was still going to the line at very high rates, but now he's going to the line over 8 times per 36 minutes, and that's a career high for him right now. And it's changed the way that he's played the game because he's making his free throws. All of a sudden now he's more confident going to the rim. He's developed a face-up game, which he got over the offseason. He's been working with Bob Tate on his jump shot, and it's so much better now to the point they're running him off screens on occasion. They're letting him run. They're giving him the ball on curls and things like that. And it's not just him spotting up from you know 18 feet or whatever it is. The shot is obviously tremendously better, and it's just kind of helped him with everything else all around. That doesn't even include the fact that his handle is so good that I think there are a lot of teams. Like, I think if you put Blake Griffin on the Pacers even, which is, you know, a team that's contending for, even though they're slumping now, I mean, we're talking about a team that could be the one seed in the East. You put Blake Griffin on the Pacers, he probably has the best handle on that entire team. So, you know, you take a guy his size, his athletic ability, his speed, and you give him that handle, and he's just, him and LeBron James are probably the two best players in transition in the NBA right now. They're the two best finishers around the rim. And you factor in the handle, the skill now, the passing ability, the way he can create out of the high post for his teammates. He's become one of the five or six best players in the NBA.
You're thinking Blake Griffin for David West now, huh?
Yeah, that sounds like a great deal, right?
Yeah, right. Well, actually, it would have been good because Paul would reunite with David West, and all he needs is Tyson Chandler, who has won a ring, but you know Doc will never go after players who have already won a ring. He wants players who are ringless. Andrew Hahn, Charlie Widows, DJ Foster, practically the whole Clipper Block staff, and the rest of Clipper Nation adored Eric Bledsoe, his hawk-like defense, his shot blocking, and his aggressive driving skills. But Doc Rivers sought to trade him to bring in more shooters, specifically J.J. Redick and Jared Dudley. Redick has overdone himself, Dudley has struggled, but looks to be picking it up at the right time. How has the Eric Bledsoe trade worked out for the Clippers?
You know, it's kind of weird to evaluate because Redick has been hurt, right? And that's not really something that you could have seen coming. So I think when you look at trades like this, it's almost hard to evaluate them in year one. We've seen that Redick is tremendously helpful on both sides of the ball. He's probably one of the two or three most important perimeter defenders on the team, which doesn't get talked about very much. And he's definitely one of their most important offensive players. I mean, the Clippers run sets with Redick that they're just incapable of running whenever anybody else is there in his place. You know, Crawford is a really good player and might be the sixth man of the year, but there are certain types of plays, you know, specifically if we're going to get nerdy for a second, you know, like there's certain like floppy action where they're just running Redick off screens and pin downs and those sorts of things, which they don't do with Crawford, and they don't do them with Willie Green, and they don't do them with Matt Barnes or with Jared Dudley or anybody else, or Granger or anybody else who's a shooter who they might be able to put at the two for whatever reason. Reggie Bullock's not doing that either. So it changes their offense and adds a completely different type of dynamic. And when you can add unpredictability and movement to an offense, it only gives defense more reason to mess up. So having Redick there on offense is just an incredible help. With that said, I mean, Bledsoe is obviously having a tremendous year. Is it surprising? Like, it's not surprising. He's been this good for 2 years. He just hasn't had the opportunity. Van Del Negro was never going to give him the opportunity to do it. And now he's having the opportunity. He's capitalizing on it. But none of that should be surprising to anyone who's watched the Clippers the last few years.
Jerry Buss 2.0, currently known as Donald Sterling, rejected trading Bledsoe because he wanted to keep that chemistry intact. But Doc was trying to teach Sterling that if you want to win a championship, you have to be willing to give up something you truly love. In Bledsoe's place is UCLA standout Darren Collison, who I call Chris Paul 2.0. Has Collison eased the pain of the Clipper faithful? In other words, did the Clippers do the right thing in exchanging Bledsoe for a chance at a title?
Yeah, I mean, look, Bledsoe is, I think the Bledsoe thing could have really worked with them. I was actually really excited when they got Doc. I mean, obviously because Doc is great, but, one of the main reasons why I was so excited about it was just because Doc has run a very similar backcourt to what a Paul Bledsoe backcourt would have been in Rajon Rondo and Avery Bradley, which is a guy Bradley was, you know, when he first came up, he was kind of a point guard. He was just an athletic guy. And the rap on him was that he doesn't know how to run an offense. His handle's not really good enough. He's a little bit out of control, but he's a tremendous defender who can defend ones and twos. He's long. He can shoot a little bit. He can move off the ball. So they said, let's just throw him at shooting guard and see what happens. And they kind of realized, wait a second, Avery Bradley, even though he was a point guard at Texas, he was a point guard when he was a top 10 recruit in high school. He was a point guard when we drafted him. He's not a point guard in the NBA. So we're going to move him off the ball and see how he does. And Avery Bradley was great. Eric Bledsoe was kind of the same thing. Eric Bledsoe found most of his success at Kentucky when he played off the ball with John Wall. That was how he got most of his minutes. Eric Bledsoe can play off the ball. The thing on him is that he can't shoot, and he's doing it in Phoenix now as well because Goran Dragic is handling the ball so much. You can kind of do a you take one and I take one kind of offense with those guys, but at the same time, Bledsoe is a really good cutter when he plays off the ball, and that can mean just as much as being a really good shooter. And guess what? His shooting isn't that bad. He's like 35% from three right now, so on a decent amount of attempts. So yeah, I mean, I think it definitely could have worked. And defensively, I think that backcourt could have just been a total killer. I mean, just really, really, really pesky with those two guys there. And then you get, you know, a nice defensive wing coming off the bench to complement that if that's what you were going to try to go for. So, yeah, I think the Bledsoe thing definitely could have worked out. But if you like the trade, it's because you accept the premise of the Clippers were going to trade Eric Bledsoe no matter what. And that was the only thing they were going to do. And if that was an inevitable part of the Clippers season, then you got to figure, okay, the haul was okay. I mean, Dudley has had a letdown season, but I don't think you can blame the Clippers for Jared Dudley showing up out of shape and not really contributing like everyone expected him to. And, you know, the Redick injuries have just been flukes.
This season, to me, does feel like history is repeating itself, don't you think? 40-26 in the lockout season, the miracle game one comeback and annihilation of the Memphis Grizzlies in the first round, then lost to the Spurs in the second round. 56-26 last season, the destruction of the 2012 Hall of Fame Laker gods, their first division banner, and they lost to their arch rival Grizzlies in a first round upset. Which season do you think we are seeing being repeated? Last season or the lockout season, and why?
You know what? I'm actually going to go with a third option there, and I'm going to say that this season doesn't really remind me of either of them, honestly. I didn't think the Clippers were contenders either of those years. I didn't think they were good enough. I didn't think they were well enough coached. I didn't think that their really, really aggressive and kind of overzealous defensive style was good enough to hold up against the more disciplined offense, like the Spurs, who swept them in the second round a couple of years ago, and they kind of just totally fell apart last year. I figured last year that they were going to win a playoff series. I thought they were going to win that Memphis series, but I didn't really see the Clippers going much further than that. This year, I think it's totally possible the Clippers can go to the Western Conference Finals or the NBA Finals, and I wouldn't be shocked at all. It's just it's a better team. It's a more disciplined team. It's an improved team. It's one that knows how to play defense. I think DeAndre Jordan is a legitimate defensive anchor now. I mean, I we hear praise for him for Defensive Player of the Year. I don't know if I wouldn't go that far, but I do think he's having. I've gone through the list, and I do think he's having a top six or seven defensive season for a center right now, behind guys like Noah, you know, a Noah or Dwight Howard, or someone like that, or a Roy Hibbert. And I think DeAndre is probably on that second level of centers right now. And that's a great thing for them to have. And I think that's part of what really separates this team from the Clippers teams in the past couple of years.
Now, the Clippers selected Tar Heels prospect Reggie 3D Harvey Bullock using the 25th pick in the 2013 NBA draft. Primarily provides three-point shooting and team defense. I really like this dude because he reminds me of a young Ron Artest. If you change his hair, get rid of the sideburns, fix up his chin, you could see the resemblance pretty clearly. He doesn't possess the lateral quickness nor the tenacity of world peace, but he's got wingspan, he likes to chuck, according to Justin Russo, and he knows his role pretty well. But Bullock's had some tough luck in the NBA. Cursed for being injured, cursed for being a rookie, cursed because the Clippers have too many small forwards. What has it been like for the shooting guard / small forward?
I think it's probably been tough for him. I mean, look, he got hurt at the wrong time of the year. He was just starting to get a little bit of playing time, just starting to find some rhythm, and then he went down, and it just kind of it hurt him a lot. I think there's a chance he could have been a 10-minute, 15-minute player in this rotation by this point, had he not gotten injured. But that's fine. I mean, he's a rookie. He wasn't expected to contribute coming into this year. I actually think he's going to be a nice player. He can shoot. I think he has an intuitive understanding of how to find space within an offense. What he needs work on now is his off-ball defense. He tends to get lost. He tends to drift a little bit. I don't think he always knows where to rotate to within Doc's defense right now, and that's a problem. You can teach that stuff in November and December, but at this point, these aren't teaching moments. These aren't learning moments. These are moments when you have to absolutely execute. And I think that's why he's out of the lineup right now, just because his defensive intuition is not all the way there. But again, he's a rookie. I mean, that's fine. That's true for the vast, vast, vast majority of rookies, even the good ones. I mean, look at Michael Carter-Williams, who's probably going to be your rookie of the year. He has the same issue. So the problem is Michael Carter-Williams can play and can play tons of minutes because the Sixers don't care. Actually, the Sixers do care. They're actively trying to lose. So they're fine with something like that happening. But when you're on a 55-win team that's, you know, gunning for potentially 58, 59 wins on the season and trying to win a championship, then you can't really have guys who haven't figured out how to play within the defense yet. And that's the problem with Bullock, but I don't anticipate it's a long-term issue. It's just, hey, he's a rookie, and that's just what rookies are.
And that's why the 76ers traded for Byron Mullins in a Clipper salary dump.
Exactly.
Reggie Bullock should have went to the D League, but why didn't the Clippers do that when you know rookies aren't going to contribute until probably their third year? My hunch is Bullock won't play unless he is traded, sent to the D League, or when his rookie contract is up. When do you see him becoming a true contributor to any team, much less the Clippers? Are the Clippers going to keep him?
Yeah, I mean, who knows what's going to happen over the offseason. I think a lot of the offseason moves depend on how the Clippers fare in the postseason. Look, if the Clippers go to the finals, then this team's probably coming back next year pretty similarly. I can't imagine the construction being that different if this team goes to the finals. I mean, why? You know, you obviously want to continue to improve, but you're not going to tear the whole thing apart and start trading rookies who are, you know, your assets and your future because you lost in the finals when you're already a relatively young team with a young enough nucleus to continue to win for years down the road. If they lose in the first round, then that's a different story. Maybe we see some moves. I think Bullock can be a contributor by next season. I don't see why he couldn't be. If he's not a contributor by next season, I wouldn't consider that a disappointment. The Clippers drafted him knowing that he had work to do, knowing he was a bit of a project, but had pretty good potential. If he hits his ceiling, he's probably what? He's probably Danny Green, right? We're going to make the UNC comparison of a guy who can just be a 3-and-D guy. I mean, that's if he hits his absolute ceiling. But, you know, who knows if he ends up with that? I think he could end up being a guy who's just a quality defender who can hit threes and be a nice 7th or 8th man off the bench, which if you get that 25th pick, it's a great pick.
DeAndre Jordan has been put into this image of Doc Rivers' big three. So it's Paul Griffin Jordan. But I felt that this big three was a fake. It looked like DJ was only a placeholder until the trade deadline, when Doc hoped that Danny Granger would get bought out, and being a former face of the franchise for the Indiana Pacers and having appeared in an All-Star game, the true big three, to me, was going to be Paul Griffin Granger. I was thinking, if the Clippers are going to have a true big three, they needed to get a true superstar like Kevin Love, Kevin Durant, or Carmelo Anthony. I talked to Zach Harper, CBS Eye on Basketball, Talk Hoops, what up, about the possibility that the Clippers could get a third superstar next season, pending their results in the playoffs. Take a listen.
At Whammy Giveaway, Alfredo Rodriguez wants to know, is Paul Griffin Jordan a true big three, or do they need a true superstar like Love, Melo, or Durant to qualify as a big three? No, I think that can qualify as a big three. Like, DeAndre Jordan clearly has to keep improving. He's had a great year. If he could become, like, one of the top defensive players in the league, which I know he's improved a lot defensively this year, but he's still not there. If he could become one of the top defensive players in the league, this is something that, like, because Paul and Griffin are so good, it wouldn't take another superstar to make a big three. I do think it's very possible. I don't know how they're going to get Durant or Kevin Love, so to put next to Paul and Griffin. So I don't know why those guys are. I guess the Melo thing is legitimately a possibility in some small way, but no, they can be fine as is.
Is Paul Griffin Jordan a true big three, or do they need a third superstar?
I'm going to say now I can't see any way how Love could join. I mean, I think it's pretty clear at this point that Blake Griffin's got the higher ceiling than Love. He's got the contract that's already locked up longer than Love. So I don't see why they would pick Love over Griffin when, you know, we were just talking about how this team has developed partly because of just how they're comfortable with each other. You know, so much of defense is just comfort, and Blake and DeAndre now communicate well because they played together for so many years. You look at the best defenses and they're not first year guys who are just plugged into a system. Look at the best defenses like Memphis. Well, guess what? Their bigs in Zebo and Gasol have played together for years. You look at Indiana with Hibbert and West. Those guys understand how to communicate and how to be together because they've been playing together for a few years. Now I think Griffin and Jordan have developed that sort of same type of chemistry, and I think it would be totally counterproductive to get rid of that. And as for Melo, I mean, the reason we heard Melo rumors earlier this year was because of some sort of Melo for Griffin trade, which I honestly thought was insane at the time. Why would you trade for a guy who's 30 years old and the last year of his contract and who frankly isn't as good as Blake Griffin is right now for a 24-year-old Griffin who's got many years left on his contract? And Melo, you would have to pay more, and you'd have to pay, what, $29 million in his age 35 season, so if you re-sign him. So I didn't understand why anyone would do that, and it turns out that nobody would do that because it didn't happen. And I think a lot of people were on the same boat as me. I mean, even I live in New York. I'm from New York. All my friends from growing up are Knicks fans, and they were like, "Oh my God, if this happens, this is the most amazing trade the Knicks have ever made." They were pretty much freaking out about it. So it's a weird thing. I don't know if that Melo thing, how realistic that would be. I don't know how they would get him without giving up a superstar as well. And again, I think it would be counterproductive to bring in a guy like that just for the sake of the name and. While giving up a major piece of a potential championship contender.
I just want the listeners to understand that in no way, shape, or form was I hinting on trading Blake Griffin or DeAndre Jordan in my question. Not at all. Rather, Melo opts out of the Knicks. He comes to the Clippers as a free agent, and their starting lineup would be Paul Reddick, Melo, Griffin, Jordan.
Oh, well, I think anybody would love that. But I mean, the Clippers are over the cap right now. It's not like they could sign Melo straight up. It would have to be some sort of sign and trade. And honestly, James Dolan's history is that he will not help you leave New York if you want to leave New York. I know a lot of people have proposed sign and trades for Melo. You know, this is a sign and trade that could get him to Chicago, or this is a sign and trade that could get him to the Lakers. If you look at James Dolan's history, look at Jeremy Lin. James Dolan does not like to help guys leave New York. If they want to leave New York, they got to do it on their own. And you know what? That is a totally impractical logic. Normal logic would say if you're going to lose somebody, then you might as well get something back for him. But this is the Knicks. Normal logic does not apply to the Knicks. Only James Dolan logic applies to the Knicks. And that's just kind of the way the Knicks operate. So honestly, I would be surprised if the Knicks helped Melo leave with any sort of sign and trade.
Time for a little playoff prediction, Cats. Give me your best possible path to the NBA Finals and give me your worst nightmare path to the NBA Finals.
You know, I think it's pretty easily that they have to play Portland in the first round if they want the easiest possible matchup. It's looking right. It's just that Portland, their offense has really regressed as the season went on. At the beginning of the year, they started off 24-5. They were winning because they were hitting all these threes, but a lot of them were contested. It wasn't really sustainable. It's a very, very, very mid-range heavy offense. LaMarcus Aldridge leads the league in mid-range attempts by, you know, an absolute mile. It's not a fully efficient offense in that sense. And because of that, I think they've fallen off. You know, they're not a bad team. They're still a good team. They're just not as good as, let's say, a Memphis team or a Golden State team or Phoenix or Dallas. I think those teams have more sustainable production than something like Portland, who also is not a very good defensive team. They're in the bottom half of the league in defensive efficiency right now. And that's something that you kind of love to see. A team that thrived off contested shots and mid-range shots at the beginning of the year is usually one that is in contention to be a regressor in the second half of the season. That's what we've seen from them. And as of the second round, it's the Western Conference. You're always going to get somebody good between Houston, Oklahoma City, and San Antonio. All those teams are really good. I think the best matchup for the Clippers specifically might just be Houston, between the fact that Dwight Howard has those ankle issues right now with his left ankle. Patrick Beverley is out, and Houston doesn't really have any perimeter defenders. And since, you know, when Howard went down on March 27th, it just became a totally different offense. And if Howard isn't 100% in a second round series, then all of a sudden, even though Omer Sheik is a very, 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 very nice defensive center, it's just different. He can't do what Howard can do. And if Howard's not 100%, then it changes. You know, James Harden is not someone who can guard a J.J. Redick type, because James Harden gets lost off the ball. And Redick moves off the ball as well as anybody else in the entire league, the way he runs off screens and all of that. So Redick tends to kill Harden and make him look really, really, really bad defensively. There's actually a whole YouTube video of just James Harden defense guarding J.J. Redick, and basically just how not to play defense. And that's all it is. And as for Oklahoma City or San Antonio, I pick safely, and I say San Antonio because they can't make you look bad, right?
Fred Katz of Clipper Blog, ladies and gentlemen, promise me you will take more questions from me on Clipper Blog Live.
Well, I guess I don't really have a choice anymore now, right?
You sure don't. Hey, why don't you give the Clipper Blog staff a shout out?
Yeah, I guess I work a lot with Andrew Hahn. We're on Clipper Blog Live all the time. He's our managing editor. And then there's Jovan Bua, who's at all the games, and Sirit Sohi, who writes a ton. And we just brought on a bunch of new guys as well. DJ Foster isn't able to contribute as much as he would like now, I'm sure, because he's super busy, because he's full-time NBA guy at Bleacher Report now. You know, he's in greener pastures now, but you know, we lost Charlie Widows because he got hired by the Knicks. But I think we're doing a pretty good job, and I think all the new guys are doing a great job as well.
Ever heard of 311?
I have not.
Creatures for a while on Whammy Radio. Clips Nation coming up next.
Whammy Radio.
Made to drown. I'm not used to
tomorrow on Whammy Radio, Clipper Psychology 101 with Steve Perrin from Clips Nation. You don't want to miss this.